Welcome to Passion. For more information about Passion, please visit us online at www.passionchurch.tv. Now let's join the service already in progress.
Thank you, Steve. I'm actually really surprised that he didn't talk about how fast I talk. Every time I get up to speak, Steve, you know, he always has to say that I hold the record. But anyway, I'll hold it down today. And, you know, thank you, Steve, for the opportunity to, you know, to speak this morning. If I was to ask each one of you this morning one thing that you have learned about life, I believe that we will get a lot of interesting answers. I mean, we grew up in different families, different backgrounds, a variety of values, beliefs, you name it. But I am convinced that we would all agree on one thing this morning, and that is that life is not easy. Life is not easy. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that life is not fulfilling or that it's not full of unforgettable moments, beautiful moments that make it all worth it. But what I am saying this morning is that we cannot expect to get through life untouched and unaffected by hardships. That's what I'm saying. Yes, there are tears of joy and happiness, but there are also tears of sorrow, of pain. It's life. And I'm convinced this morning that what truly matters is not so much that life is difficult. I think you all know that. And if you don't, please tell me how you do it. But what really matters this morning is how we respond in life. In fact, one of the most powerful things I've learned in my personal life is that the measure of one's character is not determined by how we respond on the mountaintop when things are good, when things are going great, but in the valley of darkness, discouragement, and despair. That is what measures character. Yes, we all have a story to tell. Yes, we have our share of pain and tears, I'm sure. The crucial element is, do we become paralyzed by these moments? As I heard somebody say, do we master the moment or do we let the moment master us? The reality is that we are all bound to visit a dark and lonely place at one point or another. In my opinion, there's no life that captures the ups and downs, the triumphs and the failures as good as the life of David. In fact, we learned from Pastor Steve that, you know, that that's one of his favorites as well. And let me tell you something this morning. He is my personal hero. David is my personal hero. And that may not make a whole lot of sense to you because, you know, why not be like Esther? Why not be like Abraham? Why not, you know, just you have a number to pick from. But there's something about David that captures the core of who I am. Believe me, I know that the man did manage to make a mess out of a huge portion of his life. And I also know that he made some poor choices along the way. But there's something about him that I can identify with. He was still a man after God's own heart. You see, David's life has taught me that life is not measured by the number of victories. In fact, as C.S. Lewis says, failures are the finger posts on the road to achievement. This is why I think that David has one of the most interesting storylines of the Bible. Remember the little shepherd boy that took care of sheep and sang in his solitude? The same guy was the only one who dared to king a giant that nobody dared to touch. The same guy that also became anointed to become king. And even people wrote songs about him and about his victories. You might say, Myra, but you know, why can't I be like him? Why can't I have what he had? Why can't I have the strength and the courage to come and kill a giant that nobody wants to touch? Well, you see, the truth is that David wasn't always at the top. He hit the very bottom at one point in his life. In fact, there was a day when David lost his job. He lost his wife, his counselor, his best friend, and he even lost his own self-respect. David was alone. David was defeated. David was discouraged. And I wonder how many of us have ever felt like that. In case you're wondering what's going on at this time, you see, in a nutshell, David was fleeing from Saul for his life. You see, it seems that all of David's trouble began when God took the kingdom from Saul because he refused to live by the heart that God gave him. And so poor David now has to run for his life because Saul is angry. He's jealous. He can't stand the man. And the interesting thing when you go to 1 Samuel 21, we find out that while he was trying to flee from Saul, who's very angry, David ends up in Gath. Did anybody hear me? He ended up in Gath. You don't look shocked enough. Gath was the home of the same giant that he once killed before. David was trying to find a place of safety, and he ended up in the enemy's camp. Explain to me, how does that happen? What was he thinking? That's right, he wasn't thinking. He was desperate. He didn't know where to go. And when he realized that probably that wasn't the smartest choice for him, because the Philistines began to realize, you know, who he was, then I want to read, this is the very heart and the core of this message this morning, so I want you to pay attention. 1 Samuel chapter 22, verse 1 tells us that David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam. David ends up in a dark, damp, and depressing place. You see, David lost everything and everyone he leaned on. And I'm sure that the cave didn't look ideal. I'm sure it didn't look like the throne that he deserved, but it was a safe place for him. And although David found himself at the lowest place in his life, we can learn from his darkest hour this morning. Although he felt hopeless, we can learn from his response today. Although he was completely empty, we can be filled with hope this morning and learn from his cave. You may think I've lost my mind, but the cave is not all that bad. You see, I'm convinced that God uses the cave for our own good sometimes. Whether it's to change the course of our lives, whether it's to teach us, it is to mold us, it is part of his plan. How am I so sure? Because I've been there. And the undeniable truth is that each one of us will go by a cave at one point or another in our lives. You see, David probably didn't understand why he ended up in there. He was supposed to be king. And just like us, sometimes we also wonder why or how we get there. Whether it was an inevitable situation that was completely outside our hands, or maybe it was a choice that we made that changed everything, you fill in the blank. But we all become cave dwellers. And I'm sure that if someone had asked David, David, where do you see yourself in 5 years, in 10 years from now? What goals do you have for your life? I'm sure that he would have said, man, I'm going to be king. I've been anointed. You see? Not once did David see a cave in his future. And the thing is that none of us do. I didn't expect a cave in my life. We expect good things to happen to us. We expect and we hope for success, for good things for our lives. We don't ever get up in the morning and say, I hope that today I can have the worst day of my life. Nonsense. None of us would ever do that because we hope for good things. But the thing is that sometimes things just don't go our way or just how we want them to go. Just like David, we find ourselves in a cave, not knowing how, not knowing why. And like David, it seems that our hopes dash to pieces in a moment's time. See, what I do know is that by the time that David came out of the cave, he was a changed man. What I know is that he had a different perspective, that he was marked by the cave. You see, God had extraordinary lessons for David to learn. But the truth is that many times, in order to accomplish all that he has for us to do, we've got to learn some lessons along the way. God wanted to shape him into a better servant. And the lessons that needed to be learned could only come out of the school of affliction. You see, in my opinion, God had David enrolled in the cave of troubles. But you see, in order to survive the cave, we've got to learn some lessons. Otherwise, we'll stay in there forever. So this morning, I want to talk to you about three cave lessons that have become true in my own personal life. The first one is that the cave is a place of refuge. You see, when I was looking things up for my message, I pretty much had the whole main body already written. And I knew it was a place of refuge. I knew that that's where David ran when he wanted a safe place. But my mouth just dropped when I came across the meaning of the word Adullam. You see, it means sealed off place. That's where David ran to. That's where he found a place of refuge, in a sealed off place. You know, one of the things that I love about this man is that David was very expressive. He was a man's man, but he knew how to express his emotions. He knew how to pour his heart out to God. He wasn't afraid of doing that. In fact, that's how we can learn from him, by reading the Psalms. We can see the cry out of the depth of his own soul. But remember now, he was alone. He was in a dark cave. And he was away from everyone and everything but God. Let's look at Psalms 142. I cry aloud to the Lord. I lift up my voice to the Lord for mercy. I pour out my complaint before him. Before him, I tell my trouble. When my spirit grows faint within me, it is you who know my way. In the path where I walk, men have hidden a snare for me. Look at my right and see, no one is concerned for me. I have no refuge. No one cares for my life. I cry to you, O Lord. I say, you are my refuge, my portion in the land of the living. Listen to my cry, for I'm in desperate need. Rescue me from those who pursue me, for they are too strong for me. Set me free from my prison, that I may praise your name. Then the righteous will gather about me because of your goodness to me. You want to know what it feels like to be in the cave, in case you haven't been? This is what it feels like. Look at my right hand and see, there's no one concerned for me. I have no refuge. No one cares for my life. I'm alone. I have hit the bottom. I have no strength. I have nothing. I cry. I complain. I'm overwhelmed. I look for help but find none, and I pray. That's what it feels like to be in the cave. You can almost hear David crying out to God, but I was supposed to be king. I killed Goliath. I'm not supposed to be stuck in a cave. I deserve a throne. Why am I here? Does anybody know what this feels like? The darkness, the dryness of a place like this. Does anybody feel David's aspiration and how low his soul has fallen? We don't plan to be in the cave. You see, there was nothing left for David. There was nowhere else to run. And I know what this feels like, because I've been in the cave. But if you're still not convinced of what this place feels like and looks like, in the cave, any crutches and props that you hold on to are stripped away from you. This is a place where people end up when their dreams become a disappointment. This is where people run to when their hope of having a family never becomes a reality. This is when your dream to go where nowhere, no man has ever gone, crashes to the ground. This is where people go to, the cave. The cave is where people hide when they're in pain, when there seem to be no answers, when there's too much shame to bear. The cave is where we run when we need refuge. You see, a lot of people in the cave come to the realization that their plans did not work out as they thought they would. Anyone know what I'm talking about? But the reality is that the cave is where God does some of his best work. This is the miracle of the cave. This is where you discover that God is all you got and that he is enough, because everything else has been stripped away from you. You see, in the midst of pain and uncertainty, David did not forget God. He may have felt lonely, misunderstood, abandoned, but he knew he could cry out to God. You know, we all got it twisted at times. It's not that God walks away from us. It's that we walk away from him. He never moves. So David is pleading to God. He's asking him to help him, to free him. And that is why I love David. That's why he's my personal hero. Because this is where we see his heart, the very essence of what God saw when he chose this young man, his heart. So the cave offered David a safe place. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't what he expected or planned, but it offered him a safe place. What we learn is that David used the cave to cry out to God. He used the solitude to pour out his heart to him, to his ultimate source of refuge and strength. And David never, never lost sight of God in the midst of his troubles. He used the cave as his refuge, the sealed off place to seek God. The second cave lesson we've got to learn this morning is that the cave is not meant to destroy you, but to transform you. I know we don't like to hear this, but the reality is that sometimes God has to take us to places like the cave so we can finally learn, so we can learn how to trust in him. You see, God brought David to a place where he could mold him and use him. And when God brings us to such a state of nothingness, which I may have just made up that word, is to guide us, to change the course of our lives, not to end our lives. Remember his promise? To prosper us, to give us a hope, to give us a future. We can't forget his promises when we're in the cave. Here's the problem. Anytime that we become cave dwellers, humanity's perspective tells us, you've lost this. You've lost that. You messed this up. Look at the decision you made. I mean, you're done. Might as well just end with your life. That's what the humanity's perspective is. That's what they want to tell you. And you see, you will always encounter people that do nothing but remind you that you look like a caveman. Can I share something profound? Cave dwellers don't need more critics. They need to be loved, embraced, and accepted. You don't know what they're in there or what they're dealing with. And when you're in the cave, it's crucial that you hear what God is saying to you. You see, a lot of times in the midst of chaos, people are telling you something here, people telling you something there. We can hear what he's saying. He's trying to scream, no, no, no. Just because you're in the cave, it doesn't mean that your life has ended. It doesn't. I'm shaping you. I'm giving you purpose. I'm helping you refocus. I brought you here so I can bring healing to your life, so I can restore your life. I'm trying to change the course of your life. It's time to start again. Your failures are not fatal. If we could only hear his voice when we're in the cave, I believe that our lives would change the moment that we heard him. Don't make a mistake. David was alone. He felt abandoned. He was crying out to God. You can see through his words, he's desperate. However, I'm confident that the difference oftentimes between David's situation and our situation is that David did not waste his time promoting his need, but used it to seek God. I know what it's like to feel like there's no tears left to cry. I know what it feels like when out of 7 days, not even one day that week seemed to be okay. When you feel like you don't have the strength to wake up that morning. But you see, I knew that deep down inside, I had to find strength in him. And that I could not dwell on my pain. Moments like these are significant. Yes, they're painful, but they're life-changing moments. And it's during times like this that we truly understand God is all we have. God changes our perspective in the cave. He changes our lives. I love what Max Lucado says about this. He says, a man is never the same after he simultaneously sees his utter despair in Christ's unbending grace. To see the despair without the grace is suicidal. To see the grace without the despair is upper room futility. But to see them both is conversion. You see, conversion doesn't only refer to one becoming a Christian. In fact, according to the Webster Dictionary, it simply refers to the act of turning or changing from one state or condition to another, or the state of being changed. Despair, pain, can teach us lessons that otherwise we would never learn. It's all a part of his plan. God is never caught by surprise and will use every situation that we go through to teach us. Despair in Christ's unbending grace equals change. The cave transforms us. And you see, 1 Samuel 22 has the second part that we haven't read. After David ran to the cave of Adullam, a sealed off place, he doesn't remain alone for too long, although he probably wanted to stay alone. In fact, we read, the word is very clear in stating that when his, David's, brothers and his father's household heard about it, they went down to him there. You remember now that it hasn't been that long since David's family paid no attention whatsoever to him, right? I mean, his own father almost forgot that he had a son. And Samuel had to say, Jesse, are you sure that's all your kids? Oh, yeah, I forgot one. Yes, there's one taking care of my sheep. Yeah, hold on. He forgot he had another son. And then, the day that nobody wanted to kill the giant, there comes little David running, coming to kill the huge guy that nobody wants to touch. His own brothers, instead of encouraging him and lifting him up, you know what they say? Oh, yeah, there comes a shorty. You're going to just show up and show up. Isn't that what you're going to do? Man, talk about having a loving and supportive family. Nobody cared for him. His family didn't care for him. But here's David, broken, weak, at the bottom. His spirit is crushed. And guess who walks in? The same family that did not give a rip about him before. I'm sure David was confused, wondering what was God doing. And I don't know about you, but in my personal experience, there's times I just want to be alone. No offense to anyone. I just want to be alone. You know what I'm talking about? Don't you just like to be alone sometimes? You need that solitude. Sometimes we just need to be alone, and especially when we are in the cave. Because being in the cave is emotional, it's hard, and sometimes it's even embarrassing. We don't like to talk about it. We don't even like to sometimes admit it publicly. It takes us a long time to admit it because it's hard. It's hard. Listen, David didn't even see any self-worth in himself. Why would anybody see any self-worth in him? That's what he thought. And I'm inclined to believe that David did not want his family, but they came in. They got in the cave with him. And you think that's crazy? Well, it gets worse. Because if you continue reading, let's look at 1 Samuel 22, verse 2. Look at what he says. And everyone who was in distress, and everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was discontented gathered to him. So he, David, became captain over them. And there were about 400 men with him. Talk about a fine group of people in the cave with David. I mean, David got himself the three D's. The discontented, the debtors, and the distressed. I mean, he got the best group of people, not. Now, let me break it down for you. Everyone who was in distress, I know you've got some friends that you probably know, people in your life that always seem to be in distress, and I also know that you probably spend 40% of your time trying to avoid them. In fact, I know that when they try to chat with you on Facebook, you ignore them. I know, because I've done it too. I know. I mean, it seems that it doesn't matter what you say to them. They're always either bad or worse, but life is never good for them. Never, never good. Now, just imagine a few hundred of those in your house. Now, the second group, everyone who was in debt, also came to David's cave. Now, have you ever met anybody who's in deep financial trouble? In fact, maybe you've been there. If you can't sleep, you can't concentrate on anything. You don't know how you're going to get up the next morning and be able to provide for your family. I mean, it seems that peace is completely ripped away from your life. And you think that's crazy? Everyone who was discontented also showed up at David's cave. I don't know about you, but I would have undoubtedly lost my mind if I had been in David's shoes. I mean, to have been surrounded by 400 people who feel as bad or worse than I do, and they're looking for a captain in me, that would have been enough to send me into a coma. You know, the thing about the caves is that it serves different purposes. Yes, it's a place where you can run and find refuge. Yes, it's a place where you can be transformed. It does bring healing. It brings about change. But after a while, you can't just hide in the cave forever. God still had a plan for David's life. In fact, being in the cave was part of his plan. And I don't know how God does it, but somehow, while in the cave, God will come to where you are and confirm his faithfulness and his promises to you. I can attest to that. In fact, God will use your cave as a banner to write his love over your life. Some of you need to hear that this morning. But the cave is not only a place of refuge. It's not only a place where we can be transformed by God. You see, there's a third cave lesson that we've got to learn. And that is that God can use your cave to help others. Okay, so we have established that David's cave has been invaded by hundreds of uninvited guests, and not just any guests. I'm talking about people with problems, with deep, serious problems. So let's take a look at what's happening around that time, because why is everybody running to a cave? So you see, everyone was suffering under the reign of Saul. He was charging way too much taxes. He wasn't treating people the right way. The guy was losing it. In fact, he would go into deep depression often. And the people were suffering and paying the consequences of, in my opinion, a crazy king. And some just couldn't take it one more day. This is why David ends up in a cave with full of people with problems. Does God work in mysterious ways? You bet. You better believe it. Poor guy. I wonder what he must have been thinking at that time. But God was working in his life. His hand was moving in David's life. This sounds like a sermon that I preached a while back called God Works in Mysterious Ways. And you see, God is giving a different perspective. He's giving David a different perspective. He's transforming his life. And in the meantime, I love this, he's using David's cave to help others. Did David feel this little? Oh, you bet. Did he feel useless? Well, I'm sure he did. Did he feel mistreated, misunderstood? I'm sure. That is why David is in the cave in the first place. And the last thing he imagined is that all these people would show up at his sealed off place. There's something wrong with this picture, isn't it? The cave was no longer a place for David to hide, and boy, did he need it. I've never lived in a real cave. I imagine that it stunk, that it was dark, that it was uncomfortable, that it was a place for animals. But God used a stinky, dark, and uncomfortable place to train men of strength for battle. The things that he does, huh? And God changed their entire lives through David and gave them order, discipline, character, and direction. The things that God can do through a cave dweller. This was such a crucial time for David, you see. But he made a choice to stay in the cave. He accepted the situation and he did the best that he could. And sometimes that's all we can do. We may not get struck by lightning with the answer we've been looking for. It may seem as if God is nowhere to be found. We can hear his voice. We can see his direction. But all we have to do is accept the situation and trust in him. Trust in him. Trust in God. David was stuck in the cave with crazy strangers. Yes, he was. But he didn't care. He stayed and stepped up to the plate right there in the midst of the chaos. He offered what was needed, even though he may have felt empty himself. He trusted God. He leaned on God, even in his own cave. You see, David dared to lead men that no one dared to lead, to teach, to train. Israel would never see another king like him, you see. God used David's cave to help others. But you know, it didn't happen just like that. You see, these cave lessons are useless if we don't have the right attitude. And I want to tell you what I'm talking about. You see, David's response to the cave explains why and how God could use a broken man to help broken people. That doesn't usually work that way. And thanks to the Psalms, we're able to study his stone. We're able to study his heart. We're able to study the transition that takes place in him. So we read Psalms 142 a minute ago. And now I want you to stare with me. I think they'll put the verses up on the screen. But just bear with me because I'm going to jump from chapter to chapter. And I don't mean to get too caught up in history here. But it makes sense to assume that David wrote Psalms 142 during the most difficult time of his life. Okay? Now let's look at Psalms 57. Verse 1, have mercy on me, O God, have mercy on me. For in you my soul takes refuge. I will take refuge in the shadow of your wings until the disaster has passed. I cry out to the Most High, to God, who fulfills his purpose for me. He sends from heaven and saves me, rebuking those who hotly pursue me. God sends his love and his faithfulness. Now, these are the words of a man who is desperate, calling out to God for help, okay? Now let's look at verse 4. I'm in the midst of lions. I lie among ravenous beasts, men whose teeth are spears and arrows, whose tongues are sharp swords. Sounds to me like right now, this is when David's cave started filling up with all this distressed, discontented, and those in debt. Now somehow, some way, in the midst of so much pain, pay close attention to David's stone. Look at how he changes. Look at his attitude. Same chapter, verse 5. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be all over the earth. My heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast. I will sing and make music. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be all over the earth. Do you see where David's eyes are on now? Do you see where they are? Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. You see, in Psalms 142, he didn't sound so positive. He didn't sound so comforted. I'm in the cave, God. This is the end. There's no one on my right, no one on my left. No one cares for me. Now in Psalms 57, you see what he's doing? David is making a declaration of dependence. Amazing, huh? Let's go to Psalms 34 now, which in my opinion was the third psalm David wrote during his stay at the cave. Look at the drastic change, verse 1. I will extol the Lord at all times. His praise will always be on my lips. What a change. You see, David has taught his men by now how to use the sword. Remember, he's training men for battle. Obviously, they spent time practicing. They developed discipline. They may have been nobodies, but now they were on their way to become mighty warriors. So look at what he tells them on verse 3, same Psalm 34. Verse 3, glorify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. You see, David is trying to set their eyes on the Lord. That's what David has done. He's already set his eyes on the Lord. Now he's trying to set their eyes on God. And he tells the distressed, verse 8, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. to those in debt, he says, verse 9, fear the Lord, you, his saints, for those who fear him lack nothing. He turns around and does the discontent in verse 10. The lions may grow weak and hungry, but those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. Man, David has found a word of encouragement for all these men in the midst of his own troubles. But how on earth does this happen? How could have God done this? How did David have a word for them? You see, this is why David is my personal hero. Because he teaches me that no matter how dark my cave may be, or how useless I may have felt, or how empty I may ever feel, God can use my situation and my circumstance, if my eyes are set upon him, to touch somebody else's life. You see, we can learn a few lessons from David this morning. And as someone once told me, a close friend of mine, that we preachers have to learn to see ourselves sitting right there with you. We're not untouchable. We're not perfect. We don't have it all together. But we're willing to be used by God and to be his vessel. So can I be brutally honest and transparent with you this morning? The thing is that I not only know what the cave feels like, it's not just that I've been in the cave, it's that I'm in the cave right now. I'm a cave dweller this morning. And as I stand here in front of you, I've been watching myself in that front row this whole time. Talk about being beaten while preparing a message. I know what Pastor Steve means when he says that it feels like he's been beaten all week long before he gets up here to deliver the word. I know. And you see, although I debated on whether or not I could stand here today to deliver this word, I came to the understanding that God can use my pain to touch someone here today. And it finally clicked. God can use my cave to help others. And it's not the first time he's done it. He used David's cave to help 400 men and to inspire me. So I say again, the cave is not all that bad. But you see, we have to become aware of certain principles, and I'm going to go real quick here. If not, we face the danger of living and staying in the cave. The first thing is that David felt enough pain to admit his need. You see, the truth is that when you're in the cave and you feel defeated, powerless, when it feels like there's nothing left, the first step you got to do is admit your pain to God. Admit it. There is something wrong, God. I need your help. I can't do this alone. Telling yourself in the mirror 100 times in the morning, I'm not in the cave, won't help you. You still look like a caveman. You still look like one. So stop wasting your time doing that. You know, in Psalms 142, verse 1, we see that David is crying out to God. I pour out my complaint before you, God. I have problems. I need your help. I recognize that things are not okay. That's it. That's the first step we've got to take. Believe me, God already knew that David was in trouble. He knew before he was ever in the cave. But we got to do it for ourselves, for our own benefit. We've got to make that declaration of dependence on God. But that's not the only thing that he did. You see, David also was humble enough to ask for help. Can I tell you something? I don't like to talk about my pain. I don't like to talk about my pain. And I like to fight my battles alone. And I'm sure that I'm not the only one in this room who feels that way. I'm private. I take pride in that. But we need people in our lives. And a very close friend of mine told me a while back something very profound, something that really just shocked me and it made a huge impact on me. I'm sure you've never heard this before. Myra, it's okay to show your emotions. It's okay. And it's not easy for some of us. We can survive alone. We need people in our lives. Sometimes we just need an encouraging word. Sometimes we just need a hug. Sometimes we just need to know that we're not alone. You don't have to call 30 people and tell them about your cave troubles. But you can have people in your life that surround you, people that you love, people that you trust, people that you've built relationships with. You see, and David not only admitted his pain or asked for help. And in fact, listen to this, because this is probably the most crucial lesson that we can learn from David today. David was willing to learn from God. You know, it's crazy to me how some people live in the cave. They go from cave to cave and never learn what God is trying to teach them. You know, that's why I love David's humility. If we gotta learn a lesson and go to the cave, well, then go to the cave, man, and then get out of it. Learn what you're supposed to learn and get out of the cave. It may not happen right away, but you're not supposed to stay in the cave forever. You know, the cave is a temporary place of refuge, not a permanent home. Listen, and if after everything that after everything I've been through, I have become so much more aware and sensitive to how many people live in a cave. We just don't talk about it. And what we forget oftentimes is that we've got a lot of cave dwellers in church. And the bottom line is that at one point or another, we all need a place of refuge. I want you to listen to something I recently read, and I'll read it real fast here. The neighborhood bar is possibly the best counterfeit there is to the fellowship Christ wants to give his church. It's an imitation, dispensing liquor instead of grace, escape rather than reality, but it is a permissive, accepting, and inclusive fellowship. It is unshockable. It is democratic. You can tell people secrets, not because most people are alcoholics, but because God has put in the human heart the desire to know and to be known, to love and to be loved. And so many seek counterfeit at the price of a few beers. With all my heart, I believe that Christ wants his church to be a fellowship where people can come in and say, I'm sunk, I'm beat, I've had it. Christ's church should be a place of refuge for those who need it. Now, I want to ask you something this morning. Dustin, if you want to come up. Where do you run when you're in trouble? Where do you go when you're at your worst? When you have no strength left in you? Where do you go when you find out that your daughter just ran away and may be pregnant? Where do you hide when you find out that your son is addicted to drugs? Where do you go when you've lost your job? And when you don't know what you're going to do the next day? Where do you hide when you've got deep financial problems? Where do we hide when we have a broken relationship? Let me tell you something. We all need a place of refuge. It doesn't matter who you are, what you've done or haven't done. It doesn't matter how many years of ministry you've got behind you, or if you just became a Christian yesterday. We all get to visit the cave from time to time. We all need someone who will listen to us, people who will lift us up. Well, what if I don't have anybody to talk to, Myra? What if I'm just alone and I just don't know who to turn to? You know what? David understands. He knows what that feels like. David ran to God and found a place of refuge. And even though he didn't know where he was going, although he was beaten by adversity, facing discouragement, in the midst of so much pain, he was somehow able to write these words, "In you, O Lord, I have taken refuge." Can we say those words this morning, regardless of where we are? The truth is that your troubles may not disappear right away. Listen to me now. I could stand here and convince you that if you pray enough, that if you fast often enough, that if you praise hard enough, you will walk out of this church and your problems will be gone. I'm not saying that that can happen. God can do it. Believe me, he can. But what I'm saying is that it doesn't always work that way. And the lesson I've learned this morning is that I can find peace and refuge while I'm in the cave. We have to learn to submit to the cave. You know, David understood what it's like to have dreams that can often just crash to the ground and crumble to pieces. He expected a palace. He waited to inherit a throne. He was handsome. He had friends. He had security. What he thought was a guaranteed future crumbled, at least for a while. And I don't know what you've lost this morning. I don't know where you are. I don't know what you're facing. But I know what it feels like when it seems like everything is just caving in on you. And it's hard to breathe. Can I tell you, nobody plans to be in the cave. David entered the cave a broken and defeated man, but he emerged as the captain of an army of mighty men. He went in running from a crazy king, but he came out reaching to take the crown. The cave refined David's life and helped to prepare him for the tasks ahead. But David only grew in the cave because he submitted to the cave. You know, sometimes the cave is the only place where we can learn what God wants us to learn. And if you haven't heard anything else I've said this morning, I want you to listen to this. You will never know Jesus is all you need until he is all you have. That's the gift of wilderness in our lives. I want you all to stand with me this morning. And let me say that one of the most difficult things for me is to be still. If you know me, you know that I'm always going. I can never sit down. And when I'm sitting down, I'm shaking my leg. I just can't be still. Does anybody find it difficult to be still sometimes? I mean, we may think we have enough strategies to deal with everything. We think we have the right formula to heal everything. But at the end of the day, when everything fails, when things don't go our way, when we're still in the cave, we just got to be still and know that he is God. And there's a song that I want to share with you this morning. If Jen wants to come up. And while we do this, I want to do something very important. I want you to listen to me carefully. As you're all standing, I want to ask all the cave dwellers in the house to sit back down. If you're willing to say, Myra, I know what it's like to be in the cave. In fact, I'm there right now and I need strength this morning. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. I'm there. I need help. If that's you, I want you to sit down. You know what? I want to go be the first one to sit down. And I want everybody else around us to be sensitive. It's not easy to declare that we're in a cave. It's not easy to declare that we're in pain. So why don't you lift us up in prayer today? Because we need you. Listen to this song and make that your prayer this morning.
To the one who is undone, he is peace to the wounded and hope for the helpless one. He is here, he is here. Be still. still, my soul, be still. Be still, my soul, be still. Wait patiently upon the Lord. Be still, my soul, be still. So be still, my soul, be still.
Difficult it may seem, in you, O Lord, I have taken refuge. Why don't you whisper those words this morning? No matter how dark and lonely the cave may be, in you, O Lord, I have taken refuge. No matter how long you've been there, in you, O Lord, I have taken refuge. Father, we thank you this morning that you are our refuge in time of trouble. That we can trust you in the midst of everything, even when we don't understand, even when the answers don't seem to be there. We declare that you are Lord and that we take refuge in you. Father, I pray for all the cave dwellers in the house that you will use their cave today as a banner to write your love over their lives. That you will continue to give us strength to lift our heads, to transform us, to change us as we take refuge in him. Would you say with me one more time? In you, O Lord, I have taken refuge.
It's been a privilege to have you join us for this time of ministry. To find more Passion resources or to make a donation online, visit www.passionchurch.tv. Remember, you can't live without passion.